It is unacceptable that they use their power to keep us voiceless.
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show where we get to talk about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey everybody, Happy New Year!
Hello, happy 2015!
So, new year, new format for Popcorn Prosecco. Instead of talking about three movies, we are going to just stick to one, and we're going to go really in-depth, and we're also going to include a news section, so we'll get to talk about some, you know, hot new trailer, news story, casting, whatever broke during that week. And then we're going to wrap up with kind of like a game section that should be a lot of fun. We're going to give it a test run this week, so we hope you guys enjoy it. But we're starting things off with the big news item of the week, which is Ant-Man. We got an Ant-Man trailer, and Angie will jump into that.
This week, Marvel finally released the first trailer for Ant-Man, which is being directed by Peyton Reed, but once upon a time was supposed to be directed by Edgar Wright. It stars Paul Rudd. So this film has been developing for years and years and years, and it was all this behind-the-scenes drama behind it. I was really curious to see how it turned out, and the first trailer came out, and it was awful. It was so fucking boring.
Like, is that like the general consensus? Because I just watched it for the first time now, and I haven't read comments. Are people unhappy with it?
I have read comments, and some people don't hate it. I don't think that many people flat out love it. I think a lot of people seem more kind of like wait and see or like no thanks.
The only reaction I've really seen is women being like, hey, shirtless Paul Rudd for half a second. Like, that's the only thing that's been filling my Twitter feed about it.
Because I don't hate it, but it's not a good trailer. It's like, on the one hand, they're definitely trying to go for a Guardians of the Galaxy type thing with the humor, but it doesn't work at all. And that's where I think Edgar Wright could have made a big difference. Like, the two jokes that come in the trailer, they just feel so freaking out of place. It's insane. And
Well, it's because it starts out with this, like, very serious, very ponderous voiceover from Michael Douglas about, like, heroism or something. I don't know. Believing in yourself.
Responsibility.
And all the schmaltzy stuff with the kid.
Yeah, and then it cuts to Paul Rudd, and he's like, huh? And that's like the first time that you're like, oh, is this supposed to be a fucking comedy? I didn't realize that. And then instead of just kind of like going with, yes, we're kind of like going to be like Guardians of the Galaxy, they go back to being this like very serious, action-packed epic. And then at the end, there's like a joke that is completely stolen out of Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's like, is it too late to change the name? And I was just like, what? Are you supposed to be funny? Are you not supposed to be funny? If you're not supposed to be funny, then why do the people involved that you do?
I have a feeling it's not supposed to be a funny movie in the way Guardians is. Like, I'm sure there's jokes, because every Marvel movie has some humor.
Right.
But I don't think... I think they're trying to market it like Guardians, and they are just shoving it... Like, they're shoving a round peg into a square hole and trying to make that work. And it makes the trailer... Look, I thought it looked like a bad TV movie, or like a movie from the 80s we all forgot about.
It looks really silly. The visuals look ridiculous. Like, that shot of him... riding an ant? That's kind of my biggest fear with this whole movie, and it's been like that all along. When they first announced it, I'm like, really? A superhero that turns into an ant? Like, the size of an ant? That's ridiculous. And sure enough, like, I thought it was kind of ridiculous looking.
It was kind of interesting, because my first watch of it was actually last night at my Tuesday night trivia, so I watched it with a room full of movie fans, and people cheered when he was actually riding the ant, but, like, it was not the kind of enthusiasm you would expect. Like, that was the big moment everybody thought was so great, and then it was, like, over. And I had the same reaction where I was like, wait, so is it supposed to be funny?
The big problem with this, too, is that it's just a poorly cut trailer. This is not a well-edited trailer. There's absolutely no build. It's not like, let's say, Guardians or Avengers Age of Ultron, where it's got, like, a really clear tone and, like, a great music selection. There's nothing that... like, distinct about this, that's except for the fact that it's Ant-Man.
But, I mean, that's the thing, like, Marvel's entire thing is, like, they make movies with so much, like, personality, and this has no personality. It feels like a movie, like, despite the fact that it ends up with, like, a buff Paul Rudd riding around a fucking ant, it feels like it could have come from, like, any studio, any franchise. It felt really boring, and as for the tone, I mean, I know you guys are saying it's not supposed to be Guardians, but it's written by Adam McKay, it's being directed by Peyton Reed, who directed, like, Bring It On and Yes Man. It's also not supposed to be a serious drama, so I don't know what they were trying to do there.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it is funny, but if so, then they did a shitty job cutting that. Like, the trailer is just, it's like you said, it's shockingly terrible. Like, Marvel had some of the best trailers of last year. Everybody couldn't get enough of that Guardians trailer. People are obsessed with the Avengers trailer. And they're coming off all of that, and this is the trailer they gave us? And after so much anticipation, ah-ha-ha!
That was such an evil laugh.
I got really excited with my own pun. I was more delighted with the pun I just made than I was with the Ant-Man trailer.
All right. On that note, I guess we're just going to have to wait. Because, like, the movie comes out in a couple months, so hopefully more promo material will pour in. Maybe it'll look a little better.
It's always possible the next trailer will be better, but this one was a
Fingers crossed, and let's be honest, we're all going to see it anyway. Yeah. All right. So now we're on to our big review of the episode, and that's for Selma. And I'm just going to get to read the IMDb description today, because that's how we're going to tighten things up and be a little more efficient so we don't blabber on and, like, when plots go crazy, we get lost and all.
Now you're going to get lost in how we explain plots.
Seriously. It's the show problem. I'll admit it. All right, here we go. Selma, a chronicle of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s campaign to secure equal voting rights via an epic march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama in 1965. And this is a very good film. I'll start by saying that, but I will admit, and like Christy and Angie can both attest to it, because we saw it at the same exact screening, I didn't walk out as moved as everybody else. But at the same time, there's some pretty incredible moments with this. It's an incredibly well-acted film, very well shot, and there's a lot of great things, but I don't want to step all over it before everybody else loves on it, but I'll fill in the holes.
I think it's a really fascinating movie in that it doesn't just, I mean, it shows you this big historical moment, and from that you're like, oh, gravitas and things. But I also thought, one, it was a movie that very distinctly showed what the path to activism was, which I think is something we get lost a lot, where we remember that I have a dream speech, but, you know, we don't remember all the political maneuvering and all the strategy that had to go into getting the things that he wanted changed. And I love the way the movie broke that down in a way we could really understand. And then secondarily, I really loved how the script gave us a side of Martin Luther King Jr. that I don't think we tend to see when we admire him. Days where it showed us these moments where he and his wife were dealing very frankly with the fact that they know people want him, and not just him, but his children dead. And those scenes were very riveting to me, and the scenes where he's like arguing with LBJ, President Johnson, about, like, because President Johnson's kind of like, hey, I totally get why you're upset. This is how Lyndon Johnson talked. A lot of people don't know that. I totally get why you're upset, but, like, it's not really great for me to talk about voting rights for black people right now, so if we could just get back to that later, and, like, Martin Luther King is a boss and is like, no, we're doing this. And
those are some of the most well-written scenes in this entire film. It's like you could just watch one scene between David Oyelowo and Tom Wilkinson, and just, like, within itself, it has this impeccable build, and, like, it's like verbal sparring to the max. The two of them do that so damn well.
I think one of the good things about those scenes particularly is that as much as you are on Martin Luther King's side, it's not presented in a way where you think that LBJ is a villain or that he's, like, purposely going out of his way to, like, make life hell for people. Like, you actually do kind of understand where he's coming from, even if you disagree. I thought that this movie did such a good job of presenting both, making this seem, like, grand and making it seem like the big historical event that it was, but also making it feel really intimate. And they did the same thing with Martin Luther King, where you kind of see this man as an icon, but you also see him as a person. Like, the scenes where David Oyelowo is, like, giving those speeches,
Can you spell it? Now you have to spell his name.
Oyelowo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that Brad Pitt taught us all how to say his name.
That was nice of
him. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look for the clip Brad Pitt sings David Oyelowo's name.
Apparently it didn't quite work because I still stammered.
Oyelowo. That's how he tells you.
Well, spoilers, Christy. Now people know. Anyway, so I thought, like, in the scenes where he's giving the speeches, you kind of get a sense of, like, how, like, what a larger-than-life figure he was, and you kind of understand how he inspired so many millions of people to follow him. But then in the scenes where he's just with his family, you kind of understand who he is. The other thing that I thought she did such a great job of is making this event seem really immediate, and not make it seem like a foregone conclusion, which I think is very difficult in historical films, especially ones that depict events where we all know how it turned out. Even though we know in the end that black people, of course, they earned the right to vote, while you're watching the movie, it doesn't feel like something that you can just take for granted. It shows you all the bloodshed and, like, the craziness that went into it. So
I was actually really impressed because, I mean, obviously we all learned in school about the Selma March and everything, but to as an adult to have the facts of things, like the movie starts with Oprah Winfrey's character just trying to register, and first off, you had to get a white person to like vouch for you to register, which, as you can imagine, certain racist areas was tricky. And then, like, the guy kind of threatens her and basically tells her she doesn't fill out the form right. And it's not just normal bureaucracy. There's, like, a clear threat about how she has to fill out this form. And then later you find out that even if she filled out the form correctly and was able to get through the stupid question was hard, a question that was harder, a question that was impossible, and she ends up walking away. But if she had gotten through all that, her name and address would have been put in, like, the local paper, which, again, is just terrifying because of the context of, like, racism in the country at the time. I mean... Ugh. And then, of course, we can't talk about this movie without talking about why it's still relevant today. Like, this isn't just a history lesson that we can all be like, man, America's pretty fucked up, right? Like, you know, with the Ferguson marches going on and with what's going on now in New York between the police force and our mayor, like, it's shocking how relevant Selma still is.
Yeah, one of the things that I was most stunned by in the movie is that I feel like when you know, you always hear about, like, oh, like, civil disobedience and, like, nonviolent protesting. And when people talk about it, they kind of unintentionally make it sound like it was all like, oh, yeah, you know, these people kind of just, like, sat in restaurants and they just walked around and it was fine. This is a movie that when I watched it, I was just like, oh, my God, sometimes I don't think I understand enough, like, how difficult it was, like, what a crazy thing it was that these people actually did, how much violence there actually is in nonviolent protesting, and how hard it is for those nonviolent protesters to resist the temptation to go to violence. Like, and, you know, it feels justified in sometimes where, you know, one character that we really like gets hurt and you almost want to see other people, like, turn around and, like, beat the shit out of the people that did it to them. And you see how hard it is for them not to.
You know what? I think I might not have taken to it as much as most people, at least. I feel like I just went into it not knowing as much. Like, we learned about it in school, but like you said, I didn't know all these details, and there's a lot of main characters in this, or, like, a big ensemble cast, at least, sure. And there's a lot of names floating around, and I was engaged to the point where I wanted to know everything, so I think I was so busy kind of grabbing at information that I never really connected to the characters themselves, which is odd because that's what makes this movie such a standout. But I will say that, you know, when I watch the trailers now and when I watch clips from the film, I'm kind of, every time I see something like that, I think back to how I felt when I walked out of the screening, and I'm like, holy shit, what's wrong with me? Because, I mean, I see it every single time I see something from this movie, I get excited. And, you know, there's another great trailer. I put the Selma trailer as my number one trailer of the year.
Yeah, learn from that, Marvel. But Christy, Perry, do you think that if you watched it again, you would like it more?
Like, without a doubt, without a doubt. And I mean, just the fact that I've seen, like, the trailer, featurettes, and other clips, and, like, even when actually I did the junket, and I was just talking about it, and I, like, found myself getting so excited about all the material while I was talking about it with the cast, like, something in that also made something click in me and made me realize that I appreciated it more, whereas, you know, when I just walked out of the movie, we had a double feature ahead of us. Maybe it was just my mind frame too, but I was like, you know, I didn't feel as much as I expected to feel, I guess, and also because of all the hype. I mean, everyone was talking about it at this point, and after I had seen that trailer, which dropped in November, that quickly became, like, my most anticipated movie of the rest of the year. So I walked in there with, like, sky-high expectations to have my mind blown, and, like, I did in certain respects. Certain scenes, yeah, like that, the opening with Oprah Winfrey and what follows right after, like, that scared the shit out of me. That made me jump.
I've been telling people to bring tissues, not to get too into what she's referring to, but the scene that happens after that opening scene. I figured out a second before its pivotal moment what we were seeing, and I was still not prepared. I shouted, and I was just crying. This movie is, it's a powerful movie, but it's actually really well done in that I didn't feel like it was, one, pulling punches to make audiences feel comfortable, and two, I didn't feel it was exploitative in the violence. I felt like in the violence in the film, they were trying to be honest about the level of persecution and violence that was enacted against people at that time, and not just black protesters, because you see violence enacted on white protesters too. So this isn't a movie that is trying to create a divide. This is a movie that's recognizing where we've been and where we still need to go. And it's a really powerful movie. It's a really upsetting movie, but it's a movie I think everybody absolutely needs to see, and it's going to be a big contender for the Oscars this year.
Absolutely.
It's really upsetting, but you know, they actually do a really good job of putting like the slightest hint of humor in there. Like just so you're not like completely
like humanity. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's even the most depressing movie.
He does joke a little. He cracks jokes throughout this.
He's super charming. Like Oyelowo is amazing.
He's incredibly charismatic. You immediately see why so many people kind of, you know, devoted themselves to this person.
And I also thought it was interesting that the threat of his death hangs over the entire movie because it's something he was very aware of because he was constantly getting threatened.
Yeah, there's a lot of gallows humor that comes from that, actually.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of has a very, very dark sense of humor because of it, and his wife is not so happy with him joking about his imminent death.
It's funny when you joke about being assassinated, and I'm like, that's fair. I get that. But, like, what I thought was amazing is that, like you said, there's a gallows humor to it where it's something that weighed heavily on me, but it didn't feel like a cheat, and it didn't feel like this kind of perverse reverence. Like, it felt genuinely like, think about what it must have been to be him. He was a smart man. He knew exactly what he was risking doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know if people... I that's incredible to me. Like, that, you know, and watching the protests that are still going on. Like, when I got out of Selma, I wanted to go out and do something. I wasn't sure what, but I was just so... Like, I was, like, vibrating with outrage and with a desire to see more change towards what we haven't accomplished yet. And, yeah, Selma really got to me. I'm getting choked up. Someone else talk.
I'm curious to see what happens with the awards now, because didn't it just get snubbed by a guild?
It's been snubbed by a lot of the guilds, actually. And I'm very upset about that because it's a movie that it's... The movies that are getting passed are, like, ones that are stuff like, you know, The Imitation Game and Theory of Everything and, like, lots of biopics. American Sniper. Yeah. Unbroken, I think, is getting snubbed a lot, too. But that's another biopic that has gotten, that used to get a lot of Oscar buzz. And it
basically say it got snubbed from the PGA, the Producers Guild Award.
That's what today was.
And I believe it was SAG, right?
SAG. It didn't get an ensemble.
Completely overlooked it, yeah.
I don't think that's
The WGA overlooked it too today.
The EGA?
The Writers Guild.
Oh, shit. Okay. So here's part of that. I've heard, and I know this was true for some critics in the New York area, and I heard this was true of SAG. Selma was not great about getting screeners and screenings out to the people they needed to get those nominations. And I know that sounds really shitty. But you have to understand, and I'm not defending at all, but the way this works, just the way it works, the dynamics of it are that we get notifications or we get movies in the mail, and you get so many of them that, like, if you don't send stuff for 3 weeks, it's a lot harder, and also there's deadlines involved. So a lot of people who voted for SAG flat out hadn't seen Selma because there wasn't an opportunity yet is what I'm hearing.
I absolutely get that, and I, you know, that it happens. You're absolutely right, and I'm not like mad. I'm not like I'm gonna find these people and yell at them or anything.
I'm kind of mad.
It's so frustrating about it.
It doesn't seem fair. It feels like, you know, there should be, I don't know, like an official starting line or like some like official resource where everybody can just access the movies that are eligible by a certain time, or you're not eligible
Especially
at all.
Now that there's so many things that you can just stream, that would be so infinitely easier.
I mean, I'm sure now with the Sony hack, there's a way to tap into that and steal all those movies then, but like, I don't know. I guess we could talk ourselves in circles about that issue.
Yeah, no, that's a different topic. I think speaking to what Christy was saying about how relevant it feels, one of the reasons it felt so relevant to me is that right now with a lot of the protests going on, people are, you know, commentators are saying stuff like, oh, like, you know, you should look to Martin Luther King's example. He was nonviolent, blah, 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 blah. You know, like, I'm sure you remember when people were saying that kind of bullshit around the Ferguson protests. And then this movie shows you, like, what it actually looked like when Martin Luther King was fighting this fight. And it wasn't, like, the clean and pretty, everyone's happy and everyone's nice and everyone respects each other thing that, like, people
all walking arm in arm and singing We Shall Overcome. It's not quite as simple as that.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, a fucking picnic. It wasn't a march. It wasn't a fucking picnic.
One other random point, you need to look out for the director, Ava DuVernay, her attention to detail, because it's kind of incredible.
God.
Like, the scenes when they're on the bridge, it's like, I'm watching David Oyelowo and all, like, the main characters that I'm supposed to be looking at, but there's, like, extras in the crowd that, like, I'm just drawn to. It's like, I don't know, like that they're
the
like, like, their hair and, like, the outfits and, like, where they're placed in the crowd, too, is kind of, it just, like, draws your eye into everything.
Is this her debut? Am I wrong in that?
No, she had one other. She directed Middle of Nowhere, which won her one of the director awards at Sundance like a year or two ago. And I think she was a publicist.
She was a publicist before doing this, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet that really burns her now, then, that, like, basically, like, the marketing of the campaign is hurting them.
Ooh.
She should have been in charge of that, too.
Right? And be like, I just...
But a shitty marketing campaign and failure to get out all those screeners in time notwithstanding, thumbs up, I think.
Yeah, thumbs up. I mean, I'm going to go see it again, and I'm sure I'll be singing a different tune after.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know, it's a very emotionally driven movie. It's very sad at points, but it's a movie that made me ultimately really proud of our country, just kind of seeing where we're coming from and where we're headed. And it's exhilarating. People should see Selma.
All right. Want to wrap up with our last one, Christy?
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out what to call this section. So part one of this game time section is coming up with a name. My suggestion was popcorn and playtime, and some of us weren't
on
board with that.
Awkward.
No, that's fine. So if you can find something better than popcorn and playtime, tweet at us at popcorn prosecco on Twitter. And our game for today, though, our official game, is a caption contest. So we're going to present you right now, right here, with a picture from Taken 3. So take in that. Yeah.
So each week, does this game come with, like, a song and dance from Christy, too?
Well, the idea is that the photo will go over that, but maybe we'll just cut to me jazz handing it up. But yeah, so the idea is that if you take a look at our caption, if you're listening to this on iTunes instead of watching it, that's totally cool. Go to our Twitter account. We'll share the photo there, too. And you get to come up with a caption. Just tweet at us with the caption answer, and our favorite one will end up on the show next week. We'll put it on the picture and everything.
All right.
We're crediting you, obviously.
So go do that, because it's lots of fun, and we want to laugh about it. And on that note, that is a wrap of our newly revamped episode of Popcorn and Prosecco for the new year. Hey! And if you like what you saw today, you can catch us all over the place. We have our own website, popcornprosecco.com. As Christy mentioned, we are on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. We have Facebook, too. And then, of course, we are on iTunes and YouTube. We'd love for you to go subscribe, comment, rate us, all that good stuff. And, of course, the three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and you can find me all over the internet, but you can catch my highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And I'm on Twitter at PNemroff, and you can catch my writing on collider.com. So that's a wrap on episode 48, and we'll see you next time.
What's Martin Luther King about to do next?